This is a podcast called Walk, Talk, Listen. An attempt to connect people and make this world a bit better by sharing opinions and experiences based on the belief that everyone's perspective is true, albeit partial. My name is Maurice Bloem, and I would like to welcome you to yet another episode of Walk, Talk, Listen. Welcome to Walk, Talk, Listen podcast. And can I ask you to introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Tom Hampson. I'm a deacon in the Episcopal Church. I serve at St. John's Episcopal Church in Lodi, California. It's in the Central Valley and part of the Episcopal Diocese of San Joaquin.
And it's so great to speak with you today, Tom, because actually a couple of years ago, you know, you were part of one or two days, I think, of my 100 mile when I walked through Indiana. You know, if I might ask you, if you would be asked to walk 100 miles for a cause, you know, what would drive you then to walk the 100 miles?
Sure. Well, it's interesting you asked that question because actually a year ago I did walk 100 miles from here, Modesto, to Sacramento on behalf of immigrant rights.
Great,
it
I didn't
was
know
part
that.
Of a pilgrimage, yeah, part of a pilgrimage of hope that we organized. We stayed in churches along the way and talked about issues around DACA and immigration rights and things like that in local churches. And then it culminated in a big rally at the state capitol in California, where there were about maybe 1,100 immigration activists who then went in and did lobbying in various legislative offices. So I have some sympathy for what you've been doing now for several years. I got a few blisters and a few shin splints, but it was a great experience. And, you know, I mean, obviously immigrants are people who walk to get where they need to go, sometimes for hundreds, even thousands of miles. So there was a way in which the discomfort of the walk was a way to, in a small way, identify with and join with those immigrants around the world. So, I mean, I think in terms of the question you asked, I think what fueled me and what I think fuels you and the walks that you do is a profound passion for people in need and wanting to you know, in a kind of dramatic way, maybe draw people's attention to those issues and also to raise funds and action on behalf of those vulnerable people.
And what is interesting, Tom, when you were trying to explain it, you mentioned the word pilgrimage. Mm. And when I spoke a couple of podcasts ago with Michael Trice, actually he referred to pilgrimage. And then he said, you know, it's not only about the physical part of the walk, it's also about, you know, the inner path, the search for the inner self. So did you have a similar experience when you walked when you did walk the 100 miles for refugees?
Yes. You know, for me, I mean, one of my bucket list things is to do the Camino de Santiago. And you know, I definitely, you know, we put together a kind of a prayer resource for the folks who participated. And it was a very prayerful journey. It was mindful in that sort of Buddhist sense. And, you know, I there's a certain, and I'm sure you've experienced this a lot, you know, you get into a kind of a rhythm where you sort of get out of your thought processes and you're just sort of present to the motion and the moment and the place and what you see and the breeze and the birds around you. And yes, it was a very deep kind of meditative experience, sometimes interrupted by terrifying moments where trucks whisk past you and you're grateful that you didn't become roadkill. But it was a very profound experience.
I definitely understand what you're talking about. I mean, I think in the first year, if not the second as well, you know, I would walk with an iPod, you know, with music. But actually, I decided after a while not to do that anymore because I realized then it doesn't matter where you walk. So I would go to another state and get that experience, but I was not really present because the same songs were playing anyway. So to really add to the experience, I decided to really listen and enjoy and experience the moment. I definitely relate with what you were just saying.
Another wonderful thing, and I know you've experienced this because you mentioned earlier that I walked with you. You know, as we made the trek up to Sacramento, people would hear about it and they would want to walk along. So, you know, sometimes we had 20, 30 people walking with us. Sometimes it was, you know, considerably fewer, but it was lovely to have that sense of community and people who identified with what the cause was and were excited to join in with us. You know, we had all kinds of folks do that. It was really lovely.
Absolutely. You're right. I mean, that sense of community is such a great feeling. Like to make a small jump to talking a little bit about life and what drives you in life. What keeps you going?
Well, what drives me in life? I think I just have this deep and abiding passion for justice issues. I'm not entirely sure where that comes from. Some of it was certainly my family and, you know, the things that my parents cared about. But, you know, if I can see ways in which my life and, you know, ministry that I'm involved in can make the world a little bit better, both for my community, for my children and grandson, that's something that makes me feel like, yeah, today was well spent doing those kinds of things. I'm a deacon, right? So the deacon in the Episcopal Church is ordained, takes a kind of swears an oath that it basically engages two kinds of activities. One is that I assist in the liturgical life of the church. But the other side of it is to be a kind of a liaison between the congregation and the community, particularly between the congregation and those who are most vulnerable in the community. So a lot of what I do in Lodi and more broadly in the diocese, because I co-chair the Immigration Commission, is looking for ways in which we can be a prophetic and compassionate presence to some of the most vulnerable people in our communities. And that gives me great energy and great delight. Affords a sort of a community because there are lots of other people who carry those concerns and passions. So every day is interesting and new and exciting, a lot like when I work for Churchill Service. I worked for CWS for 31 years. I never was bored.
Yeah, all right. Absolutely not. You know, I hear talking about community, you know, and trying that you try to be that connection So you, I'm assuming your community consists of, you know, elderly, you know, older people, more seniors, as well as the younger generation. I'd like to speak about the younger generation. What is your experience there in terms of how they relate to religion and spirituality? And do you engage differently with them? Do you speak differently with them? What do you see in your community?
Sure. Well, you know, the Episcopal Church, like lots of the mainline Protestant churches, is a graying phenomenon, right? Young people often are leaving our ranks and doing other kinds of things. And that would include our three children who all were raised in the church. And then, you know, it's not their thing. They're engaged in other ways. And I think, you know, for me, thinking about the ministry that I'm involved in Lodi, you know, the way that I most engage with young people is not in the church. It's in the community. It's working on issues around racism or immigrant rights or homelessness. Because I think, you know, young people that I encounter often have not always accurate, but frequently kind of a negative experience of church life. They see it as too rigid, too defined, and often too safe, I'd say. You know, they're looking for meaning. They're looking for ways to change the world that they live in. You know, I mean, young Greta there, who's such an articulate spokesperson for the environment, I think is a great example of that. So, you know, when I'm engaged in the community along these issues, I'm not, you know, trying to convince them to come to church, but I am very candid about what I do, what the work of the church is, and why my faith motivates me to be in kind of a alliance with them on, you know, whatever the issue happens to be. And, you know, I do hope that some of them would be drawn to, you know, connect with our congregation in a more, you know, participatory way. But, you know, even if they don't, I think, you know, the way in which we live out our faith in the community is going to be the most promising way to engage young people. Even if they don't, you know, show up in the pews, if they're showing up with us in the ministry in the world, you know, I feel good about that.
Would you formulate it then, like, in terms of what you see is, you know, maybe young people are still, you know, spiritual, and some would consider themselves even religious, but that they feel that, you know, the church as the institution is maybe not as welcoming to them, or they feel right. that. Is that how you would? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, the church often appears sort of, well, too conservative. You know, the music is not a music that speaks to them. The language as it's presented to them of worship or of scripture seems archaic at best. And, you know, I think that they're looking for meaning, and I think they have a deep spiritual hunger, but I think frequently they don't find that the church speaks to them in a way that is engaging. I think one of the things that's really interesting to me is that I'd say it's perhaps an exception to that, is that I think that there's a growing interest of young people in more contemplative forms of prayer, in the kind of sort of worship experiences that Taizé offers. You know, I think partly because the world is such a crazy place in many different ways, you know, they are definitely looking for some contemplative kind of route, some place of peace in a turbulent sea.
me piggyback a little bit on that, because when you were working for CWS, I think, you know, you're one of the masters in terms of ensuring that the audience you were working with, you know, that you spoke the right language, you know, so that they understand. So how do you do that then, you know, as a, in your present role with the younger generation? You know?
Well, you know, I think it's within our Christian tradition. I mean, Jesus plays well if you just use what he said, you know. I mean, Sermon on the Mount, that's powerful stuff. Matthew 25 about, you know, helping the hungry and the thirsty. I mean, that young people totally get that. The words of the prophets, Isaiah and Jeremiah, the challenging to the empire. You know, I mean, there's lots in our scriptural tradition that, if, you know, sort of on its own merit, can be very powerful for young people. And I think, you know, that, you know, some of the parables of Jesus, you know, the parable of the prodigal son, I mean, that always plays well, you know, the rebel, you know, who goes out, you know, makes endless numbers of errors and yet still can be received back. I mean, they're wonderful illustrations of, you know, where our faith tradition can speak to young people. But I think it's important to, you know, sort of put some energy into understanding their frame of reference, what their vocabulary is, what their music is. You know, they live on social media in a way that is, you know, for a 72-year-old guy, kind of amazing. I mean, it's one example. So I'm working with a group in Lodi, fledgling organization that really arose out of the Black Lives Matter demonstrations that we had and that I was involved in. And all the meetings that we have, you will appreciate this, Maurice. I mean, the interaction we have online is entirely through Facebook Messenger. So it's just like this endless, you know, kind of, you know, and, you know, I haven't really felt like an old guy till then. I realized this is a generational issue.
That's great that you're still a part of that. Yeah.
It's hard to keep up, man.
Oh, that's too funny. Yeah.
Cracks me up.
Yeah. You know, you alluded already in terms of that you're very active, you know, for, you know, trying to raise the voice of the refugees within these countries and their challenges, the migrant. I heard you mention Black Lives Matter, injustice. What are some of the things you worry about at the moment? That's on one side. And the other part is, you know, what are some of the things that that makes you still very hopeful in terms of the future and the challenges that we are facing as a world at the moment?
Well, I think one of the things that has me especially worried right now is how divided we are as a country. The, you know, sort of polarization that we see right now between the, you know, red and blue, or however you want to frame it, those who mask and those who don't, seems more severe than any time in my memory. And, you know, the kind of demonization of the other side, that it makes it very difficult to sort of figure out how you sort of bring this community together in some way. So I find that really disturbing and somewhat frightening. You know, I think we have a lot of healing to do in this country. And I, you know, it's going to be a big work for all of us to do that. And to find, you know, those places where we can agree and to engage on those things in creative and productive ways. You know, I mean, one of the things, and you know this well from your work with Churchill Service, it's really quite interesting how a disaster can be a community building event, because people, you know, their world is blown away, so they have to work together, and you know, they do in amazing kinds of ways. And that's been, you know, a sort of an odd way of reconciliation in different communities around the world. And it's somewhat tragic, I think, that our experience of this pandemic hasn't been like that. That it's I would say been used as a vehicle to further polarize people rather than, you know, bring us together to fight this common threat, which I think is really tragic. You know, I'm concerned that, you know, we have just a growing environmental threat. You know, I think about my 13-year-old grandson and the kind of world that he's going to inherit. I think that we have to engage on the issues of climate change and ultimately to make some significant changes in the way that we carry on our collective life if we're going to have a world that we want to leave to our children and our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren. And that, you know, means, you know, the way we do our everyday life, and it means the way we do our collective life as a country and as a world.
And what gives you hope within this? What is your hope?
Well, one of the things that gives me a lot of hope is the engagement of young people around issues of justice and care of creation. I mean, Greta is one of my heroines. I just love watching her speak in front of these big international gatherings, you know, and she's just so confident. She's just like, I need, you guys got to shape up. I mean, I just love what she does. And, you know, I see that in the young people that I work with in Lodi as well. There's a sense of great possibility in them. And they give me hope that, you know, this next generation is going to keep the torch and keep moving forward. I think, you know, I get a lot of hope from the congregation that I work in. You know, I'm hosting or kind of facilitating, I guess, a conversation that's going on now for several months around white privilege and the history of racism in this country. And, you know, those are not easy conversations to have. But I've been so impressed and inspired by the people who are participating in that with great courage, you know, are treading into territory that, you know, can be pretty uncomfortable. And I think that that's one of the things the church really does well, is it can create safe spaces for hard conversations. And then, you know, I'm inspired always by Churchill Service. You know, I worked there for 31 years and, you know, remain a supporter of the agency. And the way in which, you know, this ecumenical, interfaith, community-based organization is assisting people around the world and building community here in this country to be a compassionate presence is, it has been and remains a real inspiration to me.
Any last message for the listeners of this podcast from your side?
Well, you just be sure to support Maurice, because he really needs your help.
I appreciate it.
and really, Maurice, thank you for inviting me to do this, and thank you for this, you know, courageous thing that you've done for a number of years now. I mean, I think what you've accomplished is not only, you know, raised significant amounts of funds for people in need, but you've inspired communities and you've inspired the staff of Churchill Service by stepping out and stepping up in a really powerful way. And I honor you and appreciate it very much.
Well, thank you.
You're awesome, man.
Well, that's the admiration is mutual. So thank you so much for your willingness to share your story today.
My pleasure.
And thanks for everything you do. Thank you for listening to Walk, Talk, Listen. Please check us out on www.100mile.org or follow us on Facebook.